Accession number 22077, Reel 1.
Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 1. So, can you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in Sunderland. Mm-hmm. On the 6th of January, 1915.
Yeah. And what did your father do?
My dad was a sergeant in the Royal Engineers.
Uh-huh. And was he in the First War? Or?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. My dad, we came down to Bristol when I was 3 years of age, and shortly after we came here, we used to go to a place called the Donkey Slide under the Clifton Suspension Bridge to use it as a slide. And my brother, my big brother, was told he had to take me that day when my mother said, otherwise you don't go. We went down there with a bottle of Kali and some sandwiches, and we slid up and down until the tray had gone and our backside of our trousers had gone. And in the afternoon, this chap came running down and he shouted, "Harold, Ted, your dad's back from the war." And we ran all the way home, and Dad was there, and he hugged us, gave my brother a half sovereign, which he still has, and he stayed with us for a week, and he was killed just before the war finished. So my mother had a pretty rough time bringing us up. So that's the situation at the point.
Yeah. And you went to school in Bristol?
Yes, Ashton Gate, and had a wonderful singing teacher who taught me singing, Mr. Williams, and I better tell you this, he asked my mother if he could train me, and she said she couldn't afford to pay. He said, "No, I don't want money, the boy has talent." And I used to go to his home, which was at Nailsea, which is about 11 miles from Bristol, on the back of his cycle twice a week. It was cobbled stones in those days. However, he trained me well, and I stayed at school till I was nearly 14, and I then got a situation at Budgets in Nelson Street, which was a wholesale grocer's. And I was there with them for nearly a year. Wonderful place for whom to work. I liked it very much. And my mother worked around the corner at Sloan's Billiard Saloon in Union Street. Fry's and Cadbury's, all those people used to date. And when I got this position, I was trundling a cart around the city, collecting and delivering goods. One instance I would like to say, I had to go to Parnell's in Newfoundland Road to collect 228 jars of piccalilli. And when I got there, the girl came out and I signed my chit. She put them in my carrier car, trolley, and as I picked it up, The slat at the back had not been secured, and the piccalilli went. And if you've ever seen 56 pounds of piccalilli on a trunk, anyway, she called out Charlie, and Charlie came out, and I was very upset. I was in tears, actually. I didn't know what to do. And he said, "That's all right, Leo, at least go and get another couple." So that was it. And I never told my mum, I never told my boss. I worked there till almost in the December of that year. I came home one night, and my mother said to me, "Harold, how would you like to join the army?" I thought this was a rather strange request from my mum, and I said, "But I am in the army. I was a Salvationist." And she said, "Oh no, I don't mean that army, I mean the King's army." And I said, "Oh no." She said, "Why not? I used to hear the men talking." And she said, I said, "Well, I believe that if a man commits an offence and goes to court, he's liable to be told, well, you can go to jail for 3 years or you can join the army." And this was a fact, apparently, in those days. Mum said, "No, it's not true." Anyway, she said, I'll read it to you. 11 boys wanted for the Gloucester Regiment, which didn't mean anything to me then, and to serve in the band. I plucked my ears up because, although I was in the Salvation Army, because I was a singer, I sang with the lady songsters, boy soprano. And I never learned an instrument, but I was interested. And so that was, I sort of began to be really up with this. And then Mum said to serve in Egypt, and that sunk the whole thing, because when I was a boy, I just loved anything of any books I could get, I would read about Egypt. That was it. Excuse me. I went down to the recruiting office at the centre, 8 Coulson Street, And there was a chap standing there with a cigarette in his mouth. He said, "What's he want, cock?" And I said, "Well, I want to join the army." And he said, "Just want to come here now, them all on Christmas holiday, like, you know." And I said, "Oh." I said, "How do you know that?" He said, "Well, I'm here all the time, you know." And he was nothing to do with it. He just used to stay there, I suppose. He said, "When? How old is he then?" I said, "I'm 14. "When is 15? And I told him. He said, "Well, do you come back then?" So I came back then. And I knocked at the door, and I better not make the noise that this man said, but a very loud voice said, "Come in." And I went in and sat down. And this chap said, "Sit there." And he's sitting. The table was a very narrow one, and he's not very far away from me, about this distance. What's your surname?" And I told him, "Morris Metcalf." And he said, "What, with a bloody iPhone? Sorry." I said, "Yes, Sergeant." And he said, "If he's showing the Gloucesters, he's got to be Metcalf." And that's what I was till I was warrant officer years later. But that's another story. And he was a very rude man. He had quite a few medals, and he had a purple nose, and I realised why when he leaned towards me. He reeked of whiskey. And anyway, he enlisted me. There was an awful lot of trouble during this, because when he came to the fact, he said, what religion are you?" And I said, "I'm a Christian." But of course, the question was, "What denomination are you?" And I could read this upside. And I corrected him, and he caught hold of me by the lapels and started to shake me, by which time I was in tears, and I was going to kick him. He was such a big man. Anyway, I said, "That's enough." He said, "He's joined the band. It's got to be CV." And I didn't know what CV meant. He meant C of E, of course. But the door opened on the side, and I got up, and I said, "I'm going home." And when this door opened, this officer came out, a Captain Cully, a real gentleman. Lovely man. And he said, "What's going on here?" And before this bloke had a chance to say anything, I said, "This sergeant's been very rude to me, sir, you know." And he took me in and enlisted me. And the thing I do remember forcibly, there was another boy called Leonard Livingstone joined, because he was L, his number was one less than mine. And we called him David, of course, at that time. And when I was enlisted, he gave me my king's shilling and my shilling for my day's pay. And then he pointed to this map on the wall, which was an underground railway, and he said, "There's a man out there. He came with his mum and dad, and he was 6'2", this fella, a real yokel. If he'd had a straw in his mouth, he knew he'd come from Shepton Mallet. And when he came in with his mum and dad, he was so tall that their little feet were not, I can remember it now, touching the ground." And the officer said, "When you go to London, you'll get to Paddington Station, you get the Underground, and I want you to put this man off at London Bridge." We never spoke a word the whole journey to London, I'm not joking. And when we got to London, we got out at Paddington, and I was so naive in those days, you know what thing, well, you probably don't, but I thought I was going to see the King, because he lived in London, you know, and I've never been to London. And we got to London, Paddington Station. We never saw the outside of the station. I spoke to the porter. He said, "Down the steps, son, and, you know, and get the train in. The next station's London Bridge," which I had seen on the map. Of course, when we got on this, it was a Circle Line, and we went the wrong bloody way. So that was that. Anyway, eventually we got to London Bridge. The two sergeants took this man away. I thought, that's the last time I'll see him, but it wasn't. And I went on to Gravesend. And at the barrack, on the station, there was this lance corporal with three good conduct stripes up, Harry Timmins, wonderful chap. And he said, "You're the boys from Bristol?" "Yes, come here," he said. And we stood quite close to him, and he said, "Listen very carefully what I've got to say. I'm sorry, but I'm only going to say this once." And, "Yes, corporal," he said, "I haven't seen you." I said, "Well, that's..." I thought it was a bit strange. He was only standing that far from me. And I said, "I'm sorry, corporal." He said, "Look, if he doesn't want to join the army, show off now." And I said, "But we were tested at Bristol this morning. Right turn, quick march." And we marched up to Milton Barracks, Gravesend, which I shall never forget. And
so what was Milton Barracks like? What did you first see?
Well, the first thing I saw were the gates. Huge, huge gates. Very wide and very pointed. Had you tried to climb over the spikes at the top, you would have been in severe trouble. That was my first impression. And the walls were between 6 and 9 feet thick. and all round the top of the wall was Damart barbed wire. And at 6 o'clock when retreat sounded, that was it. You were there. I've always remembered it because the guard room was on the left-hand side, and there was this huge, lovely driveway all the way down, a huge gymnasium on the left side, two rugby pitches, so you can imagine it was a long stretch. And on each side of the road, there were conical apparatus. They were actually cannonballs, but you couldn't see that because they'd been painted so much. But between the cannonballs, about 10 yards distance, there were chains, black chains, so you had a secure... But when I arrived there, there were six chaps painting these balls white and six chaps painting the chains black. And when I left on the 15th of November that year, there were still the same six, not the same six blokes, but it was minor punishment. So that was that. And he took us down to the boys' room. He said, they're not back yet. They'll all be on back later on from leave. I'll take you to the dining room. And he gave us a mug and plate. He said, tomorrow you'll have a Dixie and you'll have to march there. Well, on the way up to the dining room, I could smell these kippers, and I hated kippers, really. And I was reaching before I got there, you know. And when we got inside, the Lance Corporal on the counter, he said, kipper, son? I said, no, I don't eat kippers. He said, well, cheese. I said, I don't like cheese either. So he said, you're going to be hungry then, boy. I had a cup of tea. And I remember it was so thick coming out of this ewer. And I don't know what it did. It did your insides good, I'm sure, because it made you go anyway. But the point was, I said to Len, let's go see if there's a place we can eat. And I asked the corporal, and he said, there's a naffy at the top of the road opposite the guard room. You go in there, you get something. We went to the naffy, the girl with her little hat on, and she said, what do you like? And I said, what have you got? She said, we have char and wad. Well, I didn't know what char and wad meant in those days, of course, because they'd only just come back from India, the battalion. And I said, what's that? She said, oh, tea and cake, son. And I said, how much? She said, 3 halfpence. We had 2 teas and 2 pieces of cake for 3 halfpence. It's true. And after we'd eaten, I said, what's that in there? She said, oh, that's a snooker billiard place. And my mother had worked in the billiard saloon, I told you, and I practiced for a year with the professional, and I could play reasonably well, but I'd been warned by my mother not to play, especially for money. And being a Salvationist, I didn't think it was right. Till I went in there, and a bloke said, you the boys from Bristol then? And I said, yes. He said, swan a game? And I could see my mother say, don't play. And I said, yes, I don't mind. And the girl, I said, how much is it? He said, it's threepence an hour. So I said, we'll have half an hour, you know, for 3 halfpence. The girl put the lights on and we played. And he beat me. And I knew he was going to. I won't say I'd let him, but that's another story. And then when he went back, I thought, it's going to come now. And he said, swan another game, cock. And I thought, yes, this is it. And I said, yes, I don't mind. Swan a little bet. And this was my mother. And very guiltily, I said, yes, I don't mind. So he said, 5 shillings. I had 11 bob from what I'd got from my company and my mum and my 2 shillings. So I thought, yeah, I'll take this. So I said, okay. And I gave the money to the man sitting there, and he gave his money. And we started off. And after a little while, he made a mistake. And I scored 78. And that was it. He picked the cue up, he was going to belt me with it. It was awful. It's all around the regiment. Oh, this little tiddler from Bristol had taken Charlie for a ride. So that was my first night.
So you met the other youngsters for the band. They came back from Leeds.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And you were all in one barrack room.
One barrack room.
Yeah. What was that room like?
Very cold. It was January. There was a fire with one stick and one piece of coal. Don't get me wrong, this is true. And I thought, it was cold too, it really was cold. And Lance Corporal Timmins was the boys' Lance Corporal, and he sort of told us who they were and so on. And I was in the corner at this end, and the corporal slept at the other end. There were 12 of us in the room, and there were 12 boys upstairs. We were to go to the drums. These boys were already in the regiment band and drums upstairs. So we were all newly enlisted, except one boy named Malanafy.
And you were all about 15, were you?
Well, yes and no. There were three other boys, apart from Melanophy, who were drummer boys, were on that. And Melanophy was nearly 18. He wasn't on his man service, but he was the senior boy, yes? Which is the story. The corporal said, "I'm leaving you now. I'm going to see the drum major. I'll be back shortly, and you'll get to bed, and tomorrow night you'll be in bed by 8 o'clock. This was regular boys at that time. Lights out was at 10:15. Boys had to be in, well, we had to stand to the beds for an inspection. Anyway, he went out, and I did what I always did before I went to bed when I was at home. I got down by my bed to say my prayers. It was my normal wont. And suddenly a boot hit me on the side of the head. And I was righteously indignant is the word, I suppose. But I wasn't. I was very angry. But I didn't know what to do and I didn't know who threw it. And I thought the best thing to do, Mick, is to get into bed, which I did very quietly. But I never forgot it all the next day. But the next morning, we were told that we had to go to Chatham to have our teeth inspected at the naval barracks. We were paraded outside the guardroom, and there were four or five men, and Len Livingstone and myself, and we're in civvy clothes still, of course, and what there was of them. And suddenly I felt this presence about me, and he came round the front, and it was the regimental sergeant major, and he was a wonderful, smart man. Mr. Middlecoat, and he stood there, and he was going on a court-martial, I think, he was medals and all, and he came up to me, and he said, "What's your name, boy?" And I said, "Metcalf, sir. Go and get your bloody face shaved." I had two little wisps at the side, you know what I mean, I was only 15, I've never forgotten this, because I went, I didn't know what to do, I ran away, knocked at the door of a bunk who happened to be the A Company store, and he said, "What's up, cock?" And I said, "That man told me I had to have a shave." He said, "Come in here," and he got his open razor and it was gone, you know. And I went back in the RSN. "That's better. When you come back, you'll have your kit issued to you." I've never forgotten him. And we went to Chatham. No breakfast. What I'd had the night before hadn't sufficed me very much. Anyway, I went in. I had a tooth out in the front. I'd fallen off a wall at school and broken the tooth, and they took the rest of it out. So I had a tooth out. Otherwise, my teeth were very good. And then Len went in. It was then about 25 past nine. And we waited and waited and waited, and he didn't come out. And at 12 o'clock, an orderly came out and he said, "Who's the boy from Gravesend? Came with Livingstone." I said, "Me." He said, "Come in here." And I went in, and the dentist officer, naval officer, he asked me what had happened. And I said, "Well," he said, "have you had any food today?" I said, "No, sir." And I said, "Where's my friend?" He said, "He's in hospital. He'd had gas and he'd become very ill. He didn't come out till Easter time, so you can tell how ill he was." And I was quite upset. And he said, "When you get back to your regiment, I want you to give this envelope personally to your commanding officer." Now, I'd only been in the army one day and I didn't know anything about protocol. He gave me this brown envelope, came back, and I was ever so upset about poor old Len. When I got there, the Bravo Sergeant, Piggy Gazzard, we called him Piggy because he had pink eyes and he was a swine as well anyway, but that's Piggy Gazzard. He was a good bloke, really, but he was very strict. And he said, "What have you got there, boy?" I said, "I have an envelope for the commanding officer. Give it me." And I said, "Oh, no, I was told I'd deliver it personally." And I mean, that was it. There was hell to play. I'm not joking. He played hell with me. And then a sergeant major came by and he said, "What's going on here?" And the Piggy told him, and it was my, I didn't know him then, Company Sergeant Major Woodward, Flutie. He'd been the drum major before. And Flutie Woodward took, he said, "Come with me, boy." And he took me away. And he said, "I'll take you to the RSM, whom I had met the day before, as you know." He took me to the RSM. And the RSM said, "What did the officer tell you, boy?" I said, "He told me, sir, I was to give this personally to the colonel." And he said, "Come with me." And he took me to the colonel's house. The adjutant, first of all, I had to see the adjutant, who was Captain Graysbrook, and his brother, Elder, was the commanding officer, Colonel Graysbrook. And they took me to the house. Well, honestly, I mean, I'm not joking. I used to live at Ashton Gate, toilets at the back, straight onto the street. And this place, there was heads, animals' heads around this place in silver, and a big chandelier. Can I ever forget it? I was awe-stricken. I suppose I couldn't say any more. And the colonel came out. His lady had taken me in. And he said, "What's the matter, boy?" And the RSM said, "This boy was told to give you this letter personally, sir." So he read it, and I could see his face changing like, as he read it. And he said, "Is this true, boy, what's written in here?" I said, "I'm sorry, sir, I don't know what it is." "It says here that you were sent to Chatham this morning, and you hadn't eaten since yesterday evening at 4 o'clock. Is that true?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You know about this, Mr. Middlecote?" And the RSM quite rightly said, "No, sir, I didn't." Because he knew everything, you know what I mean, but he admitted he'd... He said, "Well, this won't do in future. When do you last eat?" I said, 4 o'clock, sir," which I had. He said, "Is that your normal?" "Yes, sir." "In future, Mr. Middlecote, these boys will have a meal between 6 and 7 o'clock every night, supper, before they go to bed." And we did. I've always remembered it because the first day we got it, it was American dry hash, you know what I mean, in a small Dixie. And we had three of these for all the boys, because there were quite a lot of us. And quite frankly, the cook sergeant did us proudly, because it was the best meal we had all day. So that was that. That was my introduction to the regiment. Then when I got back to the bunk, the drum major said, he came round, the drum major, and he said, "I want to talk to you, boy." And he spoke to me about the incident the night before. He was very nice, very kind about it. He said, "You must be very careful. The senior boy is like a lance corporal." He said, when the corporal's not here, he's in charge. Anyway, it was all waved away. And fortunately, when he came on his service, he took me on as his batman. I used to do things for him. He got a couple of pence a week. Caligreedy, bless his heart. Anyway, Melanophy, not Caligreedy, Melanophy. And the drum major took all the boys into the washroom, which was a slate bed with holes in where you put your bowl in the morning. And he gave us a pair of drumsticks. I'd been in the boys' brigade for 3 years, and I was quite a good drummer. But I was a good drummer. And he said, "Right, any of you play?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Right, play me fours and fives and left, right. And fives and sixes, lump digga dum bum digga digga dum." And he said, "Where do you learn that, boy?" I said, "In the boys' brigade." He said, "Can you read music?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He puts up this, and brum, brum, the British Grenadiers, which I could play because we'd learned it. And he said, "Righto, now, I want to see you later on, son." He saw the other boys, and he came back to me, and he said, I'm still in civvies. We've got no uniform yet." He said, "You come with me to the drum store." We went to the drum store. We went to the drum store, and Juggy Bennett, the Lance Corporal, was there. And the drum major said, "Have you got a uniform to fit this boy? Red uniform." And he said, "I don't think so, Major." He said, "Well, what about it?" He said, "Stuart died 2 weeks ago." And, I mean, the uniforms were the regiments, of course. They were yours while you were there. And Stuart was a very old soldier. When I got this coat given to me, they put it on and it fitted me. But it had 6 good conduct stripes, gold, on the sleeve. And I was told they had to stay there, because if they'd taken them off, being abroad, there would have been a different colour red, presumably. I didn't know this then. But they gave me my cap, and I went back, and I didn't know what to do. They gave me a drum, and I didn't still have any uniform, not ordinary uniform. And the next... that was a very bad night. I told you about the night before, and I thought, well, I'm not going to let them get me down. I got down to say my prayers, and I got 2 boots thrown at me. And, of course, by this time I wasn't very pleased, and I stood up. I realised what I was going to do, and I said, "Who threw that?" And unfortunately, Melanophy, the senior boy, who was a Catholic, by the way, he said, "I did." And I said, "All right, you threw it, you pick it up." He said, "Bring it back here." And he was quite... And I knew there was going to be an argument. And I said, "No, you threw it. You pick it up. It's just like Sam pick up the musket. I'm not sure when I think about it now." And he suddenly came towards me with his arms flailing. And I could see my old instructor, Eddie Norton, where I went to a boxing booth at East Street in Bedminster, much to the disgust of my commanding officer at the of the Salvation Army, but my mother intended I would do it. And I'd been boxing for 3 years, not very well, but I knew about this business. And I could see Charlie Norton. He said, "If you ever get into trouble, Harold, if the bloke comes in at you, he'll come at you with his arms all waving about, just duck down, hit him in the guts, his head'll come forward, smash him in the face, that'll be it." And I'm not joking, that's precisely what happened. Well, Melanathy went down with his nose all bleeding, and by which time I was in tears. I didn't know what to do when the drum major walked in. That was it. They washed him up and took him away, and we became very firm friends after that. He was a man in about 3 weeks after that. But that was my introduction to my regiment.
When did they give you your uniform?
Pardon?
When did they give you your uniform?
About 3 weeks later.
Oh, not till then.
No, not till then. Yeah. No.
And which unit were you with now?
I was with the 2nd Battalion Gloucestershire Regiment, Milton Barracks, Gravesend.
Right. So what sort of training did you do there?
We did physical training in the mornings, boys, stick drill. We didn't have rifles, of course. We did stick drill. Used to have to walk up to a boy and say, "The adjutant wishes to speak to you, sir." And he used to say things like, or something like that, you know, but that was what we had to do, stick drill, and it was half an hour. It was quite precise, you know. And then we would go for breakfast, band practice or drum practice, whichever it was. We didn't play drums, not the boys. We practiced on this slate bed because too much noise. And then later on, we went right down to the far end of the rugby pitch, away from the mule lines, by the miniature range, and we used to practice there with a drum. That's another story.
They actually had mules there, did they?
Yes, we had a mule team, yes.
What was that used for?
Transporting kit to various places, like camps and things like that. There was no motor transport in those days. And
so were they pulling carts?
That's right, yes, they did. They pulled carts, and Sergeant Lodes was a transport sergeant, and his brother, his young brother, was a boy with me, Boy Lodes, Dobbin. And dear old Dobbin, we practiced and practiced, and then of course we practiced all the time. Flute players used to be after lunch. You had lunch midday, 1 o'clock. You'd be back practicing again. Break it through. Sports practice, whatever, football, rugby, hockey. I never played rugby for some time, but I played soccer at school, and I learned to play hockey later on, but I liked my sports, and I did quite a bit there when I was in Gravesend.
Did you have any sort of classroom lessons?
Oh yes. I sat my third class examination 3 weeks after I joined. Got my third class. A couple of months later, my second class. I sat two subjects for my first in England. And the rest I did in Singapore, and I got my certificates.
So where did all these boys come from? Were they all over background?
Nearly all Gloucester people, Gloucester and Bristol boys, nearly all.
Yeah.
And the regiment, incidentally, was many, nearly all Bristol and Gloucester men in those days. So that was our normal practice. I remember on one occasion the RSM sent for six of us and said, "I want you boys on Saturday morning to be on the rifle range." And we went down, and they were practicing with revolvers. In those days, there were 4.5s, not 3.8s. The 4.5 was a very big weapon. And at the end of it, we'd been sticking up the targets. And at the end of it, he came up to us and said, "Would you boys like to have a fire?" "Yes, please." And I've never forgotten it. Every one of us, we stood up there with this gun, and he told us what to do. And as we pulled it out, you press the trigger, you see. And when you press the trigger, it knocks you back right off the butts. I'm not joking. And, of course, it was a great joke for everyone, but that was the RSM. Yeah, you'd have his little joke.
Right, OK, I'll stop you there.
Yep.
Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel one. Harold...